Okay, now we can start the short Dhamma sermon. It might take a little for you to come back to this topic because you are maybe in different subjects. Maybe you are paying attention to breathing, maybe to rising and falling, or to various sensations, element characteristics. So we may be doing various keeping various meditation objects as our primary object. But let's open our eyes and come back to the lesson. So Kayagatha Sutta, as we know, it is available in Majjhima Nikaya, and one of the suttas which is explaining very beautifully about various meditation objects, various meditation subjects. And first of all, about Anapanasati, we discussed that how one can use one's breathing to develop mindfulness, and again to refine mindfulness, and then various postures. Even though here it is mentioned as four postures, Buddha mentioned not only the four postures, even the various other sub postures. Yatha yathava kayo panihito hoti tatha tathanam pajanati. So there Buddha includes all the other sub postures, not only the four postures. So the idea is we can use all these postures and post junctions to improve our mindfulness. And then clear comprehension or full awareness of various other activities, eating, drinking, lying down, or say talking, wearing clothes, stretching our limbs, and likewise various other day-to-day activities, daily activities we can use to develop mindfulness, to develop clear comprehension. And then we get on to another subject called bodily parts. So here we have taken 32 parts, so giving a different perspective about our body. Because typically we think this body belongs to me, or this body is I am, or this body is myself. So likewise we have various wrong notions, wrong understanding. So now Buddha is taking us to different perspective, telling us it is not so. This body consists of various bodily parts, and none of them are attractive. But once they are assembled, or once they are put together, everything appear like kind of a shape. We call it a man, a woman, a child. So likewise we give various names, and but ultimately if we sort of disassemble it, then we can see various components, various bodily parts. So that's another subject that we discussed. Then we discussed about Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation. That's what I actually emphasized today during the guided sitting. So various bodily, various elements are present in the body. Earth element, water element, fire element, and air element. And these four elements are the most predominant four elements. So Buddha asking us to look at or identify these elements through their characteristics. Say for example, using earth element. So earth element has its own characteristics, like it has hardness, softness, then heaviness, lightness, then roughness, smoothness. So those, whenever we can recognize these element characteristics, then there we can see the presence of earth element. If we consider the water element, it is watery, where a kind of flowing nature is present. Say our blood, urine, saliva, sweat, all this has this water element. And if we are able to maintain our attention to the body, probably we may be able to recognize the water element. And then the fire element. Sometimes we feel heat, sometimes we feel that the temperature of the body, and kind of digestion, and say aging, all these processes actually represent the fire element. So sometimes even if we keep one hand on top of the other, so we probably able to feel the warmth of this touching. And there we can recognize the heat element or the fire element. And the air element, that is the most easiest in a way, because breathing is mostly the air element. And again, the rising and falling, this movement is also due to air element. The heartbeat, this vibration, that also is due to air element. So therefore, typically, for a beginner, we are using air element as the first entry point to recognize various elements. Once one is able to recognize this most predominant element, so that paves the way to recognize various other subtle aspects, subtle elements, which may not be immediately possible to understand at the beginning. But later, once our mindfulness is refined, we may be able to recognize those as well. Now, having said that, now we can get on to a different subject. So this is called 9 Charnel Ground Contemplations. So this is, for some of you, it's not that interesting because it's giving an entirely different perspective of our life. Typically, we don't emphasize this aspect of our life, but rather we hide these and we live in a kind of a really beautiful, really shiny sort of environment. We are trying to hide all these sort of negative aspects of our life. But here in this sutta, Buddha actually revisits various aspects of our life. So none of them are sort of alienated to us. This is something that we inherit with our birth. So coming to death or to become a dead body is something common to everyone. Now, in this charnel ground contemplations, so this dead body is being used to contemplate. Now, typically, if we have kind of a conceited mind, so then it could be an hindrance to the progress of spiritual path. So to have a kind of an innocent mind, a mind filled with humility, is something very unique, something very advantageous for this practice, because such a mind is quite mild, wieldy, malleable, and it's flexible, and living on the ground, not in a heaven or not in a sort of a lifted plane, but we are fully grounded. So to ground ourselves well, to understand the reality of life, so this kind of contemplation is very useful. So here the idea is, one is going to a charnel ground, a cemetery, and looking various dead bodies of various stages. Now I have explained one stage. So this stage is called the first stage. So as you know, during the old age, old time of India, of Sri Lanka, the dead bodies are simply thrown to the forest. So they are not burnt, they are not buried, but rather simply thrown to the forest and the relatives may come back. And at that time, the body starts to decay. So now the body, this dead body is passing various stages. So a monk or whoever is quite diligent in practice is visiting this charnel ground to this cemetery and go and find this dead body, and he start to contemplate. So this is a kind of a practice was available long time ago. Nowadays this is not much used, but very useful. Say for example, if our mind is extremely conceited, we think that we may not die, we have everything, I am the best. So likewise, we could have a kind of a conceited mind. On the other hand, we may get conceited because of our beauty, maybe due to our wealth, maybe due to our, say, strength, our titles, various positions, whatever it is. So we can be quite conceited. On the other hand, we might even be lustful. maybe due to various sites. And even on such occasions, we can use this channel ground meditations, contemplations, to ground ourselves, to come to the middle, rather than living in a false or kind of a dream world. We can use this kind of a realistic attitude, to this kind of a realistic practice, to ground ourselves, to come back to our reality. So this is quite common to ourselves. We are not sort of free from this stage. So when one is seeing a dead body, which is maybe bloated, discolored, and oozing with various matters, various liquids, at that time we actually feel kind of a disgust or kind of a loathsomeness. So we are using that attitude to bring our mind back to the middle. So it is not for something that we are using for depression, but rather we are trying to bring our mind back to the middle. So this is again important. So the idea is not to get depressed, but rather to well ground ourselves, to be with the reality without omitting any parts of our life and only taking actually, typically what happens is we encourage the youth, we encourage the beauty, we encourage the rising side, we encourage the growth, we encourage various activities, excitement. So all these, the positive sides we actually emphasize while neglecting all these other aspects which inevitably common to everyone. So this is where Buddha is trying to take us, to give us a full picture of our life. So what would happen to this body after the death? So if one would be able to come across this kind of a dead body, so one will understand. So this dead body is now going through kind of a decaying process, and now certain liquids are coming out, oozing matter, and then bloated and even discolored. So this is something common to me, or common to this my body as well. So that dead body and this body has no difference. At the moment this is living, and therefore because of the heat, food, etc., this is being maintained. But when the life is gone, or we get up, when the body becomes dead, so the same scenario, same situation is common to this body as well. So the yogi contemplates this body is also subject to the same nature. It's very much like that. And it is not exempt from that fate. So this already dead body maybe belong to a woman, maybe belong to a man, or who also has spent some kind of a life like us. So he also may sort of went to say to a job, did various activities, had some fun, or live with his wife, husband, children, whatever it is. But right now it is subject to death. Now it is going through a kind of a decaying process. So at that time, if we are able to compare, so this in front of me is this dead body, and that dead body and this body, this my own body, has no big difference. This my body also subject to the same kind of a change, same kind of a fate after the death. So if we are able to be quite realistic about the nature, so we are not exempt from this nature. So this is the common reality of our life. So it is actually bringing us to a different plane of or different understanding, to be quite human, to be real, really grounded person, really a kind of a simple person, kind of a person who can understand this whole scope, broad scope, or the full picture of our life. And then Buddha says what are the sort of anisansa, or what we call as the advantages. Here it is common advantages. In this Kaya Gatasati Sutta, the main advantage mention is that the mind is now going to be with the body rather than dreaming about the future or going towards the past or lingering with various household activities. Now mind is coming back to the body, because all this what we are talking here is related to the body. Even this dead body is actually a stage of our body. At the end, at after the death, this my body also subject to this kind of a change, this kind of a decay. So more and more we are able to come to this reality, to be with this reality. So our mind becomes sort of a middle association, rather than going to the up or to the down. So we may be able to be in the middle, to be in the reality. So it is, we are thinking in a realistic manner. So advantages are, on the one hand, we can remove the conceit in the mind, and we can live in a sort of a realistic life, and well grounded, with humility, very humble, and as a result we get urgency to practice, because we don't know when this body going to subject to this kind of a fate, and therefore we get the urgency to the practice. Because rather than postponing, thinking various and giving various excuses, we get a kind of a urgency to practice, because in front of me is a kind of a dead body, maybe spent say 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, whatever it is, and he or she has gone through the same kind of activities, incidents, as I am going through right now. But in front of me is kind of a dead person, dead body, which doesn't know anything, but now going through a decaying process, inevitable decaying process. So this is a kind of a humbling kind of a practice, where we become well grounded, well humble, and being with the reality. And then Buddha says the mind becomes steadied internally, and mind like to look after oneself. What will happen to me? The same fate is available for me. I am not exempted from this fate. So now I become sort of vigilant, diligent about the practice, and as a result mind starts to associate the body. Mind likes to be with the body and concentrated in the body. So these are the benefits of this kind of a practice. And Buddha explained to the other stages as well. So I have taken one stage here. So the same thing Buddha repeated for the other stages. Now assume that the dead body is in front of you, and now it is going through more time, more and more decaying happens. Now various animals are coming and eating. So that is taken as the second stage. Now one can see various, say, dogs, jackals, worms, all are coming and eating this dead body. That is another stage. Another stage is that now the flesh is almost sort of discolored, and here and there sort of wounds kind of thing is there, and skeleton is now visible, and various sinews are bound everything. So that is why it is kept together. So we are more and more being with the reality, being with the truth. So this is what happened to this body. And then the fourth stage, now the flesh has faded away, or it has gone away, and now skeleton is quite visible, and here and there the blood is visible, and it is discolored, and because of the sinews, still the whole thing is kept together. That is another stage, that is number four. And number five, a skeleton without flesh. Now because of those animals, they are eating the body constantly, various worms are there, they are constantly eating the body, eating the flesh. Now the skeleton is visible. Still it may be tied together, still it may be bound together because of sinews. And that is number five. And now, after some time, because of this continuous eating by various worms and other animals, now everything become disconnected. Different bones now are visible. Say hip bone, skull, various bones at here and there. Now everything scattered. Bones are available. And then, and after another more time, say several months, now bones also become kind of bleached. The previous color is lost. Now they become sort of faded, bleached, kind of a white. And that is another stage. Now after that, here and there bones are scattered. And it's like a heap of bones. Everything, I mean, you can't recognize which part even. Because so much decaying has happened. So much aging has happened. A lot of time has now spent. Now can't recognize whether this is the hip bone or whether this is the skull or whatever it is. Because mostly now parts are all the, even the skeleton has sort of smashed. And ultimately, after a couple of years, the bones are also decayed and everything appear like a dust. So this is the body. So this is what we are sort of admiring as me or mine, but this is the reality of the body. So if one is able to time understand this reality, time to time look at this body with this manner, so our life become sort of different, because it is because of the ignorance that we are actually not considering like this. Rather, we are able to look at life in a different perspective if we are able to time at least, not every day maybe, but time to time if we are able to look at this body in this angle. So we get a kind of a realistic view of our life. So definitely we may go through this kind of a situation, but unfortunately today the funeral directors are taking this part. So even the dead body is sort of decorated, so you can't recognize this reality. Now this reality today is well hidden. So we think that even after the death, so the body is like appearing really beautiful, and the various flowers and scents are being used to cover this reality. But even today, if you go to India or kind of a remote area, so this reality is still available. So typically we ignore this reality. We live in a kind of a decorated world, neglecting this reality. But this reality is something common to everyone. It is common to you, common to me, to all the human beings, to all the animals, and this is something common. So if we are able to time understand this reality, it is really humbling ourselves. It is taking us to the ground. It is helping us to look at others in a kind of a more sympathetic attitude, rather than considering they are bad, they are mean, or they are, I am good, I am best, like that. So we consider that all human beings are subjected to this kind of a fate, this kind of a situation. So only for this few years we are killing each other, hating each other, being jealous of each other, but ultimately this body is subjected to this kind of a fate. So I therefore invite you to time practice even this meditation object, because it is really the nature of our life, especially the nature of this body, and it is quite helpful to understand this reality. So I think, if you are already with the kind of a neutral mind, it is not essential. That is another point. So these practices are not for you to have kind of a depressed attitude. So therefore don't try to too much involve with in this kind of a contemplation, or even the Asubha 32 parts contemplation. Because if you overdo it, then it might lead to a depression. So therefore, we need to know the dose, we need to know the amount of our practice. So how to balance our mind? So that is the important thing. So if we are able to balance the mind, then it is vigilant. Then it is able to have a kind of an unbiased attitude. It may have a realistic attitude about our life. But if we shift from this reality, then we are living in a dream world. We are in a conceited world. So these various practices, therefore, is helpful time to time based on our attitude or based on our sort of context of our mind. And we can utilize them depending on that context. So with that, I like to wind up today's short Dhamma sermon. I now open up the session for maybe the questions from today's discussion, or maybe if you already received various reports, we can present them now. Basically, as our breath refines, so we don't need to look at whether it is in-breath or out-breath. So that detail or that perceptions are limited. Actually, those are the concept that we are sort of putting in order for communication. Now, as our breath refines, as our mindfulness refines, all these imported or all these attributed names, labels, everything disappear. So now what is available is merely some subtle sensation, and we can't recognize whether it is in breath or out breath, and it is not necessary. So this is where the this practice is leading us, but we think that probably our mindfulness has reduced, our concentration has reduced, we might have go wrong. So likewise, we get wrong ideas. But actually, if we are able to maintain our practice, if you do continuous practice, So this is very common. So the breath becomes very refined, where you can't distinguish whether it is in breath or out breath, and as a result, we simply have to observe this refined breath, as you have quite correctly mentioned there. So if we are able to maintain that attention, the breath even reappear. Even at that time, you don't need to sort of bother whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but kind of a sensation is there, some sort of indication is there, that is more than enough. So now you can recognize what is really happening to this sensation. Is it sort of constant? Is it appear on the same sort of intensity? Is it the beginning? Is it the middle? Is it the end? Am I able to understand the sort of the beginning? Is there any long sort of period, any long lifespan? Or it is very subtle, very transient, very impermanent. So these are something that we have to inquire. So therefore, when those conceptual information is lost, don't worry. So this is a necessity of this practice. So we have to leave aside all this conceptual information, labels, names that we have attributed, and we simply coming to the very fundamental kind of a sensation. So this fundamental sensation now we are observing with a very refined mind, with a very precise concentration, to understand what is the real nature of this fundamental kind of a sensation. So how it is coming, how it is arising, so what are the causes for it to arise, and how it is disappearing, how it is fading away. Is it lasting for a long time, or is it very transient? And is there any gap between this sensation and the next sensation? Or is it happen immediately? The next sensation happen immediately. So likewise, give some sort of a challenge to your mind to recognize all this information. Next time, once you sit, assume that you are going through this sort of a process, and ultimately you can't recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but something is there, some sensation is there. Now you are focusing your attention just to this sensation, and you don't know even where it is. Now you don't know whether it is at the nostril or at the upper lip or at any other part of the body. All that information is lost. Nothing to worry. Don't think that is that because of something going wrong, or your mindfulness has gone down. But this is the result of the practice. So this result of practice is actually leading us to the simplicity, leading us to the refinement, leading us to more and more subtle levels. So at that time we need to be able to understand the reality of this subtle nature, of this most fundamental kind of a feeling. So therefore, try to give this investigation, do that investigation once you reach this stage. So you are muted. Yeah, right.
Next question.
Yeah.
It's on the sitting practice. Venerable Sir, last time in the Dharma sermon, you have mentioned about contemplation of the four elements. Also, time to time, in the guided sitting, it was mentioned that once the breath settles and the mindfulness is established, we can go to observation of the elemental characteristics. Still, I am unclear how to do it practically while I am in the sitting practice and walking practice. It will be beneficial if one thing can explain that at what time we should start these observations and how do we practically add to the ongoing process. My current understanding is once the breath becomes subtle and bodily observations become prominent, we can feel the four elements in these observations rather than artificially calling them and noting. Much merits for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this is one interesting question. So basically, the idea is that we need to understand the nature of the elements, and so this is something I will share a little document which I have prepared for another session, which is available in Sutta teaching session, which I conduct on every Wednesday. So there I'll share that document with you. So what I'm trying to show you is the earth element. So earth element has, now typically, as you can see, the earth element is more the rough part. Say it is the solidified. So that is the nature of the earth element. Wherever you feel, say this kind of a roughness, this kind of a hardness, this kind of heaviness, softness, smoothness, lightness, so this is where earth element is present. So Buddha in this Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta actually give these details where the most, where earth element is predominant. Say head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, bones, all these are consisting more of earth element. On the other hand, if you consider other, say, pus, blood, sweat, tears, urine, so this is where the watery part is predominant. That is where the, say, the water element is present. And again, the fire element, what is, how the body temperature is maintained. And then the, you sometimes feel kind of a burning effect, and the body get consumed or get aged, and whatever we eat become digested. All these are the fire element. And on the other hand, the air element, the winds going up, winds going down, and the breathing, and all these are actually the air element. Now the point here is actually different attitude, different approaches are there. Actually, one way is to simply contemplate that we have all this nature. Say for example, if we consider the earth element, so if we recognize different parts of this body, so we understand, rather than giving names of these parts, now we can give the characteristics of these parts. Say whenever you feel, or whenever you recognize these parts, you can see you are simplifying the practice. This all as earth element, and all these 12 as the water element, and then all this kind of burning temperature type of thing, cool and heat, as the fire element, and then the whatever is movement, vibration, and they ask as the air element. So this is in a way the first part of our practice. But later we can recognize the presence of these elements through their characteristics. Say for example, now suppose you are doing walking meditation. At that time your foot is touching the ground. Suppose you are doing it on a cement floor, maybe on a tile floor. At that time when your foot is touching the ground, you can feel hardness. So this hardness is nothing but earth element. And at the same time, if it is a tile floor, probably you can feel sort of the softness, and that is also the earth element. And probably the smoothness, that is also the earth element. But on the other hand, while you are walking, probably you can feel some cold, especially suppose you are walking on tile floor. So you might feel the cold, cool nature. So that is the presence of heat element. And it may be sometimes if you are walking outside on a sunny day, probably the path may be a little warm. There also you can feel the heat element. So likewise, so you can recognize the presence of elements based on their characteristics. And as you have mentioned, it is difficult to recognize these without sort of enough concentration. So that is why probably we can do some anapanasati or rising and falling meditation in order to refine our mindfulness, in order to build up concentration. So this build up concentration or refine mindfulness helps us to understand the presence of various elements. Otherwise, we simply neglect these characteristics. But when our mind is well refined, when the concentration is well refined, our focus attention is quite accurate, then we are able to recognize the presence of these elements. So therefore, No problem. You can actually spend some time. Spend you mean I mean the anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, to refine our attention. And even once the attention is well refined, even anapanasati you can sort of change into dhatu manasikara. Say the movement of the air, that is the in breath and the out breath. So rather than looking at it like in breath and out breath, now you can understand the movement, the inside movement and the outside movement of the air. So this is simply the air element. On the other hand, suppose you are feeling the in breath as cool and out breath as warm. So that is the heat element. So rather than now you do anapanasati, you can entirely shift your anapanasati to dhatu manasikara. So there now you do the element meditation, not anapanasati, entirely different element meditation. And sometimes you can feel some touching sensation, say a breath going and touching inside. So there are the sort of kind of a touching sensation is present. So that is the earth element. It may be soft. That is the earth element. And so likewise, any of these practices can be now shifted towards dhatu manasikara. And as you have quite correctly mentioned, so you need some amount of concentration to do this shifting. Not immediately. So that's why we do sort of anapanasati or rising and falling at the beginning to refine our mindfulness. And later we can shift to dhatu manasikara. Actually, rising and falling from the beginning, not really from the beginning, I mean, say after some time, is automatically shifted to dhatu manasikara. At the beginning you have rising, falling, this is still conceptual. But later, once the mindfulness is well refined, so this rising become a series of risings. Falling becomes not a single falling, but a series of falling. So there you can understand, okay, this is a series of rising, series of fallings. This is the air element. And there also each rising may have other characteristics as well. Say for example, at the beginning you feel the movement. That is air element. Maybe at the end of the rising, probably you feel the tightness. So that is the presence of the earth element. And again it is coming back, kind of a relaxing, light, kind of a lighter feeling is there. So that is again the earth element. Again the movement is also there. That is the air element. So likewise, the elements are there, but we have to be quite skillful to recognize them. Yeah, we can get into the next question.
Question number 3 of 6, this is a general question. Dear Bhante, I'm struggling to find daily sitting and walking practice time these days, and I try to become more aware of the day-to-day activities as an alternative. However, this seems not an alternative to me, since becoming mindful on day-to-day things is much more difficult than breathing practice and walking, though appear very simple. I cannot sustain mindfulness for more than a few minutes and the mind gets distracted in day-to-day activities. Also, I forget to be mindful most of the time and recall this after hours. The horse has already gone when I realized I was not mindful. I think I have to develop a regular sitting and walking before even getting into day-to-day activities with metta.
Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of a common question. Because day-to-day activities are sort of mind-involved. Say, for example, you are reading a paper. You are reading a book. Say, you are reading a newspaper. You are doing some activity on your computer. And all these are actually mind-consuming. And the sort of brainy activities. And fair amount of your attention is grabbed towards this. Therefore, we sometimes get lost in this activity. So this is where we need to understand the value of mindfulness, because one extreme is to do something where we entirely in the job, we are entirely sort of inside that and we don't know where we are. Even someone come and call you, but you can't hear it because you are too absorbed to the work. So most of you may have such experiences where you are in the in you are or you are involved in a certain task. At that time, someone is calling, someone is talking, but you didn't hear because you are too involved in this activity. So this is one extreme. On the other hand, some activities is done but completely unmindful. Say, for example, you are brushing the teeth while thinking about something else. You are planning ahead, planning today's activities, how to do grocerying, how to do whatever it is. But the brushing of teeth happened in an autopilot manner. So this is the other extreme. But the mindfulness help us to come to the middle where we are doing the activity and again mindful, and we know what we are doing. And at any time, we can come back to ourselves. And the activity happens inside mindfulness. It's very much like the under the mindfulness or under the spectrum of mindfulness, under the light of mindfulness, various activities are happening. So we are fully aware of this activity. And again, we are not lost in the activity either. So we haven't gone to the any extreme, but we are in the middle. This, therefore, I mean, finding out this kind of a balance is not easy. So therefore, as you have mentioned, even though it appears easy to do, easy to be mindful on daily activities, it is not that easy because all these daily activities either we do in autopilot mode or we get too involved, too much involved. As a result, we actually can't be mindful and we get lost. So therefore, I mean, don't worry about that. I mean, slowly, only slowly, slowly, you would be able to succeed in it. You can start with some easy activities, not some difficult activities, but some easy activities. Say, for example, select certain activities which you do alone. Say, brushing your teeth, having a bath, having your lunch. So these activities we typically do alone. And maybe defecating, urinating. So these are some activities where you get some kind of a privacy, and there you can incorporate mindfulness, you can incorporate sati. Later, you can try to be mindful while talking to another person. It is actually difficult. Say, now while I am talking to you, can I be mindful about what I am doing? So this is something I have to try. Because sometimes if the subject is too juicy, if the subject is too difficult, so my mind get too involved in this lecture, too involved in this answering. But on the other hand, if I am able to maintain some sort of a stability, some sort of a middle range, then while I am talking, I can be mindful. While I am observing you, I can be mindful. So this is something. So therefore, immediately applying or immediately maintaining mindfulness on certain daily activities like reading a book, say doing a presentation, doing a talk, or maybe watching a movie, quite difficult because you get too involved in that activity. Say, for example, while reading a newspaper, so the news articles available there is grabbing our attention. We get lost in that article. So this is quite common. So therefore, don't worry about that you can't maintain mindfulness on daily activities. Try to recognize some easy activities first, and then slowly bring that kind of an attitude, that mindfulness, to those difficult activities as well.
Question number 4-7. This is a walking practice question. Dear Bhante, this is regarding thoughts which creep in when the walking practice is progressing well. There are two ways I found to tackle these random thoughts. Example, consider a random thought of some music I like creeps in and starts playing. I notice this coming and becoming prominent as a thought while walking is happening. Is it possible to note it as a thought? Just merely a thought and not continuously until it subsides and the walking becomes prominent again. However, I find there is somewhat disliking and an aversion towards the thought. Therefore, I started letting it stay and move away from noting. The music stays sometimes a longer time, but eventually goes away. However, there is no guarantee that it will go away quickly as the noting technique. As a beginner, I do not know which method is more suitable and want to check with Bhante. Thank you for this wonderful program and for your guidance.
Yeah, actually, you have to find out the most, practical method suitable for you, because this method can vary. For some time, one method may work; another time, another method may work. So, therefore, it is quite difficult to give a sort of a unique answer, definite answer, telling, okay, this is the method. But rather, you yourself have to practically apply these methods and find out what is the most suitable method depending on that circumstances. Now, say for example, if you use the first approach on one day, another day that approach might not work. On that day, another approach might work. So that is the way. I mean, it is difficult to give a definite answer on this kind of a situation, because slowly this the circumstances actually change. So therefore, you have to investigate how which method actually works for me today on this occasion, and whatever comes to the mind first, you can apply first, and then you can go for the next one if it doesn't work. And on the other hand, if you are able to be mindful about the music, if you are able to be mindful about various thoughts, and it is not a must to go to walking like a beginner. Say for example, at the beginning, we are trying our best to be with the walking. Doesn't matter, because otherwise we get lost in various thoughts. Say whatever the thoughts related past, thoughts related to the future, daydreaming, planning. So much of distractions are there. But later, we establish mindfulness. We have some mindfulness, and now we have some confidence. So therefore, we can be with the walking. At the same time, we can watch the mind as well. So suppose there are certain thoughts going in the mind. So now you can shift your attention to this thinking. But you are not get lost in this thinking, unlike before. Now, this is the kind of a little advanced practice. We are not suitable for a beginner. But as our mindfulness is growing, we can check whether we can observe mind while walking. That is also possible. So therefore, I lost the electricity, so you can't see me. So anyway, the point here is that you are able to watch thoughts while not getting lost in these thoughts. And if you are able to do that, you can continue that for a while. And after that, the thoughts may go away, because now you are mindful about thoughts, but you are not feeding the thoughts. You are not promoting thinking, but rather you can watch them. You are simply watching them like a third person, like someone else's thoughts, not feeding them, not fertilizing them. As a result, the thoughts may go away. And now you can come back to the walking practice. So this is another practice, another approach. And similarly, you can do for music as well. Now, typically what happens is, we get lost in the music because of the melody, because of the beauty. But if we are able to listen to the music while maintaining mindfulness, probably we can mindfully listen. So mindful listening is another aspect. But as I said before, we are not lost in the music. We are not lost in the melody. Rather, we can maintain the mindfulness. At the same time, we can hear the music. So therefore, you can try various approaches and understand how broader mindfulness is. At the beginning, we started with a simple activity like walking, but later as it is growing, we can even apply it for thinking. While being mindful, we see the thoughts, we understand the thinking, we understand each and every thought. While being mindful, we understand the music, we hear the music. So mindfulness appear like a kind of a safe region, kind of an island for us to do all these observations. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I am sorry, we are going through a heavy rain. So unlike Australia, you know, Sri Lanka has a lot of raining. So I am now trying to focus my voice towards the recorder so that you may hear it properly. So as you have correctly mentioned, so nowadays we may not be able to come across a dead body, since everything is hidden for us. But as you have correctly mentioned, we can search in the internet. Many corpse images are available, and we can of course use them for us to understand the reality of our nature, reality of this body.
Question number 6 of 8. Again, another question. Dear Patrick, when the earth element is soft and small, hasn't it come to a transition point of becoming into a watery state, or maybe into a fire state? Okay.
Yeah, actually, the point here is that in any material, all these elements are present, but one of them become predominant. Say, for example, if you consider a cup of tea, maybe the water element is predominant, but if it is extremely hot, then the heat element is also quite sort of recognizable. That's also predominant. But on the other hand, when the heat element is less, the watery nature may become most predominant. And on the other hand, suppose you are eating rice or eating, say, another kind of a food, so it also has the water element, even though it appear like thick, where the earth element is predominant, but still the water element is present. So therefore, as you have mentioned, all these elements are there, but one of them become most predominant.
Question number 7 of 8 is regarding sitting practice. Dear Patrick, when doing sitting meditation, the breath is quite subtle and the mind moves to the heartbeat and it gets prominent. This is at times quite loud. Sometimes I ignore this and move back to the breath, yet it comes back to the heartbeat. At times I can watch the heartbeat and the subtle breath at the same time. This is happening for some time now. Your guidance is much appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, this is a common question, because as our mindfulness is growing, so breath becomes sort of faded and our attention may shift towards heartbeat. And it is not a bad thing. And if we look at it in a negative way, that becomes a little hindrance to us, obstacle to us. But on the other hand, heartbeat is a good vipassana object, because it is giving us a sort of a primary object. It is constantly present and located in the middle of the body, and quite distinctly we can recognize each and every vibration, each and every beat we can recognize. So therefore, you can, if your mind automatically shifts there, so no need to forcefully take it back to the breath, because all these are various bodily processes, bodily activities, and at the beginning, we are using breathing in order to refine our mindfulness, to establish mindfulness, to improve concentration. But once the necessary amount of concentration and mindfulness is available, you don't need to stick to mindfulness on breathing. If your mind automatically shifts to heartbeat, just stay there. Just observe it. Understand each and every heartbeat without missing any. And you can just be with that. And forgetting about the whole world, and you have simply a kind of a vibration. So therefore it's also a very good meditation object, and therefore you can be with that. Actually, I am talking with respect to the vipassana, not with respect to samatha. So for vipassana, any meditation object is a valid meditation object.
Okay, we've got one more question, and we've gone a little over time. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay, but give me a little time. I just want to switch off something, and give me a second. Okay, we can continue now.
A general question. Dear Bhante, we still as we people are bound by our responsibility, relationship and various other ongoing activities in day-to-day life while playing various roles. I personally, as a mother, I am craving to embrace the spiritual happiness of Buddha. But as we have risked it into our desires, we can't run away from these bonds without raising them until they grow up. Or else I may have to wait for a long time. So, how can we advise our mind for a situation of upadana while maintaining these bonds and relationships? On the other hand, if we have to wait until we fulfill all the needs of our kids, it will be too late. Please advise a method on balancing this situation. Thank you. Devan sir.
Yeah, quite interesting. Hope this is not from Chamila. So anyway, this is kind of a... from you? No? Anyway, this is a kind of a common question. Actually, Buddha's teaching is not for sort of leaving aside the whole, say, household life and for everyone to become monks and nuns. But rather, it is possible still to do the practice while being householders. Say, that is why, I mean, even during the Buddha's time, there are so many people while being leading household life, they still continue their practice. Say, for example, the merchant Anathapindika. He's a person who is really having a life, having a really wealthy life, and with lot of activities, and he is the kind of a merchant. But still, he was able to attain Sotapanna. And on the other hand, Visakha. And now you may have only two children or three children. But you know how many children Visakha had? Visakha had 20 children. And so you can understand how she was managing these 20 children and still maintaining the sort of spiritual life. And on the other hand, there's another very beautiful example called Bandula Mallika. Bandula Mallika had 16 children, and her husband is the minister in the Kosala, King Kosala, and she's an anagami. So likewise, there are many beautiful examples Buddha has given. So therefore, we don't need to sort of discourage ourselves thinking that we can't do practice because of these various household bonds, various upadana, various graspings. And but the point here is while practicing, you can still do your duties. Say for example, you do your meditation, you do your daily practice, but at the same time, when you have to do some other activity, say you have to help your children, you have to teach your children, you have to go for shopping, whatever it is, you can do them without sort of resisting them, without making kind of anger, without kind of making any hatred. You still can do those activities. You can involve in these activities. So that's why we are trying to broaden the mindfulness practice to daily activities. So therefore, at the beginning, of course, we need some sort of a dedication from our side to improve the mindfulness. So once the mindfulness is improved, once you know what is mindfulness, once you know what is concentration, once you know what is the wisdom, so at the beginning you don't know. At the beginning you don't know what is mindfulness, you don't know what is the so-called concentration, the so-called wisdom, we don't know. Because so we are still beginners. But later as our practice is growing, we can distinctly recognize what is mindfulness. We can distinctly recognize what is concentration. We can distinctly recognize when the wisdom is present in our mind. So as a result, even daily activities, we can do mindfully. And maybe you are teaching your children. You are, say, going with them to a school. Whatever it is. And that also you can do mindfully. So therefore, I feel that it is true that you actually have a lot of responsibilities, various tasks involved, but you don't need to discourage thinking that you have so many things. Ultimately, you can use them effectively to improve mindfulness, to improve wisdom. That even the monk's life, it is not something that one have to spend entirely on the forest and without getting involved with other activities, without associating others. That is possible only to some extent. But later, in order to test ourselves, in order to sort of assess our skills, in order to assess our understanding, we have to deal with others. We have to involve with various activities. We have to involve with various duties. Then only we can get a kind of a proper measurement, proper understanding about our level of the practice.
So that is the last question. We have a couple of announcements to make. I think it's the start with the internet connection that Sainath has put it. I think that got sorted last
time. Yes. Yes, definitely. Actually, this people from the dialogue, they visited the Kuti and they did a good job, and they immediately installed a kind of a booster system, and now it is working really well. I like to thank, I wrote to, I think, what's her name? Anupa?
Nirupa.
Yeah. So Nirupa to thank her, and to the dialogue personnel who actually take a kind of a personal interest to work on this, and now everything is happening well, and thank you very much.
I think we'll pass our merits to Nirupa and the team who did that. Sadhu.
Yeah.
The other announcement is, I think you would have seen in the email that you got, this is the 25th program that we are doing. So, and I think most of you who are regulars and who join the program are very familiar with the program and the structure and how it is run and everything. So we'd like to just call on for any volunteers who would like to join in organizing the program, as in, do the housekeeping, introduction bit, then you might also see when we are doing the walking practice, we have somebody on spotlight who's actually doing the walking practice for 30 minutes. So if any of you would like to volunteer for that, and also reading the question and answers and then just closing the program. So, because I think it will be good for everyone to get involved in the program. Now that we've done it for a while, I mean, everybody's familiar with the structure. So if anyone likes to join in or help out in volunteer for the organizing activities, just drop us an email and each one can take a turn and we can take any one of these activities to join in. So it's pretty simple. I've got a piece of paper with the instructions that I use, so I can share it with anyone who wants to join in. So that's the announcement. So I think just to close out the program, I'd like to thank Pante for joining in and answering all our questions. And I think we really start with three or four questions, but then during the program, they get new ones. Everybody posts in new questions as well. So thank you to Bhante and all the participants. And I'd like to pass all the merits to all beings. Sadhu, sadhu, yes. Sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu. Teruvan Sannai. We'll see you on next Sunday.
Teruvan Sannai.
Teruvan Sannai.